This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome you to Porch Talk. It's your host, Alan. I have Farouk here with me. What's up, dude?
Hello, everyone. What's up, man?
He's back.
I am back.
Dude, spent some time down in Baton Rouge.
Yep.
Tell me something.
Tell you something. Baton Rouge. Beautiful city. I recently started to believe if you want something good to happen to you, you have to go to Baton Rouge.
What a saying.
Oh, yeah. Especially if you have friends in Baton Rouge. Man, you know better than me. It's more alive than Starkville and Columbus.
Sure.
It has more people. It's more dynamic. And it has fucking Costco. So, that's one good thing.
He's excited about Costco, everybody.
Because Walmart sucks. But that's what we have.
You ain't saying anything that nobody disagrees with.
No.
It just kind of is what it is. We got Aldi around here now.
Yep.
Ain't hitting on anything, no Costco. You can't go in there and get you a $1 hot dog or anything, but you got Aldi.
I'm not saying Starkville is bad. I like Starkville. I've been here.
Starkville's fine, dude.
Yeah,
Starkville's
fine.
Yeah. Dude, what tell me a little bit about Baton Rouge, going down there, man. What's down there?
So it's not my first time. I think my first time was back in winter 2021 when I actually spent the New Year in New Orleans. So that was fucking sick. New Orleans is just a different world. I like this city. I like everything about it, except maybe the traffic, because it has a lot of streets and a lot of cars, and no one gives a shit. So that's one thing. But everything else is just the views. And I've been also to other places in Louisiana. I just don't remember the names. It kind of looked similar.
That's fine.
But Louisiana is funny because, especially Baton Rouge, because, you know, you have, whenever you have more options that you can do, like you just want to go out and do something, and there's more things out there to be done. I think this is enough reason to judge that city. And it,
sure. What about that city?
What about that city? What do you want to know about it? What do you want to specifically ask about?
Your experience, man. Like, getting down there, I couldn't imagine just being down there with Barty. What the hell is going on down there? What did y'all do?
So, we visit gardens because we like gardens and like green stuff. So is the botanical garden. It looks sick. We wanted to go to a water park. There's a water park over there, and there's also a lot of. It's not a haunted house. It's like the upgraded version of a haunted house. It's like you go in and they take your phone and they just give you a tablet which you just use Google search, and there's a series of puzzles that you have to solve to get out of the house, otherwise you won't.
It's like an escape room.
Escape room. There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds like a hawk of shit, dude.
I think it's interesting.
Did y'all do it?
Not yet.
I was about to say, I was going to ask if you got out. Obviously, you did. You're here now, but...
Yeah, but no, I didn't.
Where's the panic button, dude?
I agree.
I always find those kind of places, like, mysterious in some way.
Yeah.
You know, I have a lot of questions about it, because the escape rooms, all that, you know, there's cameras in there, obviously. They're watching you to make sure that you don't have some kind of a panic attack or... You suffer from claustrophobia or whatever else, but, I mean, what do you do for, like, a true freak of nature? Like, what if I went in there, what if I wanted to book it by myself, and I wanted to take my shoes off, and I just wanted to get around there and just rifle around.
I know what you're talking about. You're talking about naked and afraid type of shit. Yeah. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, maybe. Okay. Maybe. I don't know. What do you think?
Louisiana, I think you would make it.
Think that'd be okay?
Well, yeah.
You think I need to tell them first? It's like, look, I'm paying to be in this room, and I kind of need to... I got to get around a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll take you some time. Well, you'll make it.
Yeah. What else, dude? What kind of took you by surprise? I mean, like, you're... been in Mississippi a while, down in Louisiana, Baton Rouge, LSU country. What's going on around there?
The bugs out there, the flies, it's just unimaginable. I actually one night had to search how many flies exist per square meter in Louisiana, because this shit was insane.
Worse than Egypt.
Like, dude, worse than any place I've ever seen in my life.
No shit.
Okay? No shit. I mean, well, leave the bugs a little bit aside. Just I woke up one day and I had breakfast and wanted to go grab a cigarette or something from the gas station. It's a 10-minute walk.
Mm.
It was 10 a.m. I went there, I came back, I had to take a shower. Sweaty. And it just, the humidity, I was complaining about the humidity in Mississippi. I think I should be thankful about it. Because in Louisiana, no. And the UV index is always like above 10.
Yeah.
You know, this is like very high.
You know, we say this is Louisiana is like the armpit of America.
Okay.
Boy, it's just the raunchiest thing, you know.
Doesn't it?
It just feels like
The statement has roots, right? Because the United States started when they bought Louisiana from the French.
Louisiana Purchase, sure.
Right? The Louisiana Purchase.
But it's the armpit, dude. And what we mean by that, it's a little smelly.
Yeah.
it's got a little funk about it, dude.
A lot of swamps.
Yeah.
Well, I believe inside the city is okay. You go around the city, you start to smell that. The thing that actually took me by surprise was, I don't know, it's not a big thing for me, but it's the first time I've seen it in America, that I see another American flag just flying, a non-American flag just flying out there right in front of your house. And next to the American flag, it was an Israeli flag, and I saw it on three different houses in three different places.
Oh.
I mean, I've been around Mississippi,
mm-hmm.
and I have never seen it here. I didn't see it here.
Typically won't.
So, but I saw it there, and it kind of gave me that idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Alabama, Mississippi is, I mean, they're gonna wave the American flag. When it comes to... I mean, the United States to me, I mean, you've been fortunate enough to travel a little bit, see some other states, other ideas, but I mean, it truly is. Like, when they say United States, it's like, and you could probably attest to this, is leaving Mississippi, go to Louisiana, you're stepping into almost a brand new country.
Yeah.
It's a different batch of people.
Yeah.
You know? Maybe the one thing that I would say that you shouldn't unite us, I don't know so much anymore. It's kind of curious to me. is we had these shared values of what we believed to be true about what makes the United States of America. I don't know anymore. It's weird to see it break down, and it's kind of crazy to experience it in real time.
Yeah.
But yeah, with the flag flying, dude. Yeah. I can only imagine if maybe anywhere outside of the South, maybe you were in the Northeast or the Midwest or on the West Coast, you might see a Palestinian flag. Yeah. You might be really shocked.
Yeah. No, I've seen a lot of flags on, you know, the scrolls on the news. I've seen a lot of flags all over America, all over Europe, in protests. People put it in the windows. I've seen that. But my point was, like, just see it with my own eyes right there in front of me. And there was this gentleman right there just watering his garden. The entire thing looked very beautiful to me. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying, didn't actually, because, as a matter of fact, I'm not used to see so many flags around me.
Sure.
So, I've only seen the Egyptian flag in Egypt, maybe on a school, maybe on a government, you know,
that's
institution.
Real?
But not like everywhere, not in every street.
Man, dude.
I was born in the very north, and the very north of Egypt is like the south of USA in terms of agriculture.
Oh, yeah,
and, right,
okay.
Right,
okay.
And like, I was born in a village, right? Mm-hmm. My parents are farmers. And so, no, you don't see that. Even the city itself, you can see a lot of Egyptian, especially the main streets. Not at all. You would see more Egyptian flags downtown Cairo, which is the capital. Right?
Sure.
That's expected. But no, it's really my first time seeing all these flags. I've been to Germany, I've been to Italy, but France, but I've never seen all these flags.
Yeah, that's wild, you know, like at my house here in Starkville, and like even at my house in Kennedy when I lived there, is we were waving the flag, baby.
Yeah.
You know, and there's something about it, even with our band, Cosmic Gravy, that's how we met.
Yeah.
Is we
I mean, I have the American flag right here on my
yeah
t-shirt.
But the point I was going to make is, like, we waved a flag, we waved a pirate flag.
Yeah.
But like that is, and I didn't even have to tell Philip or anyone about that, but like, if I'm going out and I'm doing something, like, there is going to be something staged behind me, whether it's we're waving the flag of a pirate or like we're really proud to be from the USA. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. One Piece, baby. Let's go.
Let's go.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And that is kind of the pirate conundrum, too, that just because I love the message of the show.
Yeah.
And
this is how I understood it. It was like this type of thing. You have to wave the flag.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the respect I put on it, too, to that point. Is I think it's beautiful to believe in something and to be. It's the mast, you know? Like when you pull up, that's what you're about, and that's what you want people to know. That's what you're about.
Yeah.
Make no mistake.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
So, dude, I'm a little jealous, but...
of what?
the train, the Amtrak.
Oh, yeah.
Tell me a little bit about the journey, man.
So, I took the train from Union Station in New Orleans. It was a 5-hour trip. Every single second of these 5 hours were just beautiful. I had a comfortable seat. I was just seated over there. And when you get out of New Orleans, you pass over a big-ass lake that takes you all the way up to Mississippi.
Pull that mic up closer to you if you don't mind.
And so...
the whole thing,
So we passed over this lake, and there's people fishing, right? People on the boats fishing, and people just were there on their boats and just waving at the train. It was a super nice thing to see. Then when we got into Mississippi, especially right after, between Hitchburg and Meridian.
Sure.
Dude, the scenery over there is just from heaven, okay? The greens all around you, and like the trees, and you walk, and like you're riding, you're on the train. Sometimes the train is just on the level of the ground between the trees, and sometimes it's up there where you actually see somehow the top of the tree. The thing that actually grabbed my attention was how much Mississippi is actually negligible.
Sure.
A lot of, let's say, distances that the train had to go through, they had to be slow because these places have been affected by the flood.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I do remember last year, around 15 months ago, when the flood came, no one gave a shit about Jackson.
Yeah, speak, brother.
And so, this is something that we...
Didn't nobody give a crap about East Palestine, Ohio, either, when they had that train wreck?
Yeah.
With a chemical spill?
Yeah.
And then, I mean, we could take it to international affairs, but, like, you're absolutely right. And for you to, like, you know, be passing through and just kind of seeing this, and that's the thing you notice. Good. Should be.
It's, I don't know if it's a... I do believe it's kind of a policy for the state, because... I'm not going to go far off from the topic.
We shouldn't.
But it's an entire package. It's an entire package, okay? If you really want to understand the roots, you have to look at it from an upper point of view, right?
Yeah.
If you see the evolution of the history of the United States, I'm just talking about the past 67 years. I'm not talking about the entire century, or the past three centuries. Okay, I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about the past 70 years, 50. It's insane. It's insane. Me, right now, I don't hold an American nationality. I do have my Egyptian passport. I can see, and I started to see, what freedom could possibly mean when I came to the U.S., because,
okay.
I mean, I was free in Egypt, but there is one thing at the back of your mind that you can't talk trash on politics and politicians and the governing system.
Sure.
This is a big thing, right? This is a big thing, a very big thing. And those who say it's a dictatorship, it's much worse, okay? And it exists all over the entire Middle East, with no exception whatsoever. There is no exception. If you want to tell me that Israel is a democracy, all right, go look at the protests going on right now on May 27th, 2024, right now in Tel Aviv. See how they have been treated, the civilians. And now come talk to me about democracy. But put that aside, the just over the past year, I actually have been seeing somehow the attempts to incarcerate the freedom of speech right here. And in particular places, let's be honest, okay?
Mm-hmm.
In particular places, especially that, let's say the Department of Education, okay? This is a point I wanted to make anyway. It's just, it's a bigger umbrella from which you can look through these franchise policies towards the states from within, because any interior policy is just, or any foreign policy is just a reflection of the interior policy of any state.
Sure.
Okay? So this is just one thing I wanted to kind of point out when we talked about Jackson.
Yeah. Absolutely. With everything going on in the world, you know, let's just go back maybe a year ago now, maybe more, where the spotlight was on the Ukraine-Russia.
Yeah.
And now, like, we have a spotlight on the Middle East with Hamas,
mm-hmm.
Palestine, and Israel.
Yeah.
And I don't think we have enough time here to do it. I'd love to do it sometime. But the real history of the affair and like how people just accept things for what people tell them, which is not always true. And I'll say this, and maybe we will get off of it. I don't know. That Netanyahu, what he's doing now, what he had in place. If you look in the history of it, it's no surprise. It's not lost on anyone that pays attention. He had these intentions for Hamas when he got back, before he got voted back in. This was back in like during the Bush era of the United States. So you're talking the 90s and the early 2000s. The way that he talked about Palestine and the Gaza Strip. And he even brags about how he got off on Clinton with the two-party state. And if that would have come to fruition, that everything that he had put into that clause was, they would never really actually have a two-party state.
Now, this will never happen. First of all,
this is not a thing.
It's not. A two-state solution.
That's a fairy tale, Farouk. That like
has been there since 1947.
Yeah.
Since the first, let's say, it was an announcement, a decision by the United Nations at the time to not only divide Palestine, but also divide Germany, divide Poland. Now, you had all these Czechoslovakia and Poland and all these type of borders that we know right now came after that year. Jordan, for example.
Just
20 years before, Iraq. The name Iraq existed in literature, but the borders we know right now have just been created 80 or 90 years ago, So it was a whole thing. And getting back to, so this solution has been there ever since, okay? But only one came forward, which what we know as the Jewish state, as they actually identify themselves, Jewish and secular at the same time. But that the other state solution didn't just come forward. And let's say somehow right now what we're living makes sense, all right? Let me just be out of emotions for a second. What defines your rights in this world, in the new world order that's been created after World War II, is basically the power you have. It's either money, it's whatever power manifested in whatever form. You look at the Palestinian people.
I'd take it a little bit further than that to this context.
Yeah.
Is your ability to trade. They don't.
Okay.
Their ability to manifest and provide energy and utility. They don't.
And that's why they can't actually have the rights.
And like when you talk about a human right and the fact that the Palestinian people, the Gaza Strip, however you want to say it, I don't really feel like it's a fair comparison
at all. I'm just gonna say that when we talk about the Palestinian people, we're not identifying that with a specific part. So many people would say Gaza is Palestine, but there is also the West Bank. What West Bank you're talking about? The West Bank at 67 or the West Bank right now? Or maybe the West Bank 20 years ago? Because it's different. It's shrinking. Or what? Or maybe the Palestinians who actually live inside Israel and they have also double nationality. Or maybe the 5 million Palestinians that they are diaspora outside the state, outside their state, or maybe their potential state, right? Mm-hmm. It's just the state of Palestine is already recognized by around 75% of the countries all around the world. This has been over the past, 50 years. Just the big countries are not actually recognizing it for a reason. So that's one thing right there. Another thing is the great power must give you a green light to do what you want to do on state level, on a government level, okay? So, well, Russia didn't have any right to invade Ukraine.
Okay.
But shit has already hit the fan, and now you have to deal with it. But is a guerrilla war going on right now? Or type of guerrilla war going on right now is actually the way to deal with it? History tells you no. Big no. This is not how it works. Now you look at the Middle East, because this is not the first time this mistake has been done.
Well, you know the history better than I do. And I'll say this before we go into it, and be free to take this however you want to do it, is the Middle East, before the United States started getting involved over oil, they were a lot better off.
I don't know if I disagree or agree. Because before the United States actually get...
Because I think, really I think we ignited sleeper cells, terrorist organizations, and we funded them, and we created a coups and different things over the years.
Correct.
That was not good for the people of the Middle East.
Correct. And this is where mainly the big mistake lies. This is where you ignore the will of the people, which is basically the main power in any state.
Sure.
Okay? So when you try to rule them in a way that is practiced right now in the Middle East, you would have, I mean, you're creating the perfect environment
for this strife. For strife. This.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you have, if you want to fight an idea, you don't fight an idea with a sword or a gun, right? No. You fight an idea with another idea.
Debate.
You have to get down and you have to be honest. And you have, I mean, when it comes to science and 1+1 and all these stuff, it's really out of emotion. There is no morale over there, right? It's, and that's why that capitalistic driven approach of the world in power right now says that every state only cares about its own interest. The United States of America is only working for the sake and interest of the American people.
You ever ask yourself why?
I mean,
why Ukraine? Why Israel?
We can argue over that.
No, we don't have to argue. I think we'll probably agree.
Yeah, okay.
You know. Okay. But like when you think about the powers that be in that state of mind,
mm-hmm.
things really make sense for how they're going down. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's just insane for me. And
but before the United States get involved in the Middle East, you had the British. You had the Brits over there. And before, I mean, the United States got really involved.
That was a big part of like Israel becoming a state and them pushing themselves out back in, you know, back when they finally were recognized as a nation.
Yeah.
But they didn't stop.
They never stopped. The ethnic cleansing of these people have started since the announcement of Ben Gurion on May 15, 1940. Seven, when they announced the state of Israel. Okay? So Israeli call it the Independence Day of the Day of Independence, the day of creation of their state, but the Palestinian people call it the Nakba. You probably heard this term before, right?
I have.
The closest term in English to a Nakba means catastrophe.
Mm-hmm.
The word in Arabic is very rich. You know, like using a word like serenity. It's a very rich, or serendipity. It's a very rich word.
But the word that you're describing in Arabic, it means a whole lot more in that language because the English is like our language that we're speaking now, dude. Like it doesn't carry like emotion as well as what that word does. It's more than that.
It's their own experience.
Yeah.
Okay, it's their own experience, and they get to talk about it. But the whole, when somebody says the whole situation is complex, but they are not, I hope they are not exaggerating, but I want to say they are not lying at the same time. Because, yes, there have always been Jews in this part of the world. I mean, Moses himself was an Egyptian. Moses was born in Egypt. Yes, his origins are from Canaan, which Canaan basically is what we recognize now as Israel and part of Syria. But he was raised and born and raised in Egypt under the Pharaoh. As a matter of fact, the lady who raised him up was the sister of the Pharaoh. Right? How did he get out of Egypt? He killed a man by accident. You can find the same story told in the Old Testament, told in the Bible.
It's told in the Torah.
Yeah, told in the Torah. Exactly. Yeah. And so you just start thinking, all right, so this is one
point. He was ostracized for it, no doubt.
That's right. Yeah. So that's one point for it. You can't, I mean, all these people who are now, let's say, the grandchildren of their ancestors 700 years ago, are they still carry this ethnicity, this religion label, or this type of, let's say, what do you call it, Arabianism? Because they spoke Arabic as a result of colonization. We speak Arabic, I speak Arabic as an Egyptian, as a result of the Islamic colonization of Egypt in the 7th century. Before that, what did we speak? We spoke hieroglyphic, then it evolved to demotic, then something else, then Coptic. As a matter of fact, old Semitic languages like Arabic, Hebrew, Aramaic, which is the language of the Bible, because I'm a native Arab speaker.
Aramaic, yeah.
Some Aramaic, I can read it.
Hebrew.
Yep. So all of them share origins with the old hieroglyphic language. As a matter of fact, many stories that exist in the three books that we call Torah, Bible, and Quran, whatever you acknowledge or whatever you disacknowledge, some stories are actually quoted from the oldest Egyptian mythology. Okay? So you leave that apart and you come to Jesus. He was born in Bethlehem, in Palestine. He
fled to Egypt.
He fled to Egypt. As a matter of fact, Egypt was one of the first countries to mass convert into Christianity.
I know.
And it was also a reason to divide Christianity into Catholic and Orthodox and all this. Okay.
You know my studies.
Yeah, right?
I'm well versed.
Yeah, right? So you think about this and you just get the idea that this place is so rich.
It's with history and of humanity.
Exactly. And people. And now you want to impose all these colonial powers on it and these type of brutal, really brutal rules to live in, whether for the Israelis or the Palestinians.
Yeah, think about the horror stories, man, and these are hard, and like we can get back right back to it, but just to dial people.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture, and the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Well, back in the reality just for a second, is there are stories, and you can get on X, formerly known as Twitter, or however you keep up with this war, and there are Palestinian doctors performing surgery on innocent children and babies without anesthesia.
Yeah.
Without anesthesia, once again. Do you hear me? Like, describe the humanity. And like, brother, I tell you this, there's nothing worse than war.
Yes.
And another, on top of that, there's war in Yemen.
Yeah.
There's these small pockets of wars in South America now, all over the world that we really don't pay attention to. But this is like we're trying to come out of COVID and like we're trying to fix this world economy and like you know what's the solution? Why don't we kill each other? Mm-hmm. Good Lord.
Oh yeah.
You know? But man, one thing that and maybe we can dice this up is that I'm hearing is just going back to the conflict. What happened on October 7th, I am condemning. I'm not condoning. But one thing that you would have to understand is go back 3 years before September 11th, 2001,
yep.
When the planes flew into those buildings. Do you know what was happening in 1998? Like, there was a coup there.
In Afghanistan that actually made Taliban the power. 3 years right after the attack on America. Yeah, that makes sense.
The Americans done that. They funded that.
But for a reason. I mean, you have to go to the roots of it. They started this back in the 60s against the Soviets when they were invading Afghanistan.
That's why they overthrew it. The overthrow was about getting the Soviets out, but then it turned
into... they never fixed it. They just left this militia out there. As a matter of fact, they got Bin Laden and some of his friends in the 60s out here in the White House, and they called them freedom fighters.
Yes. Yeah, they did.
This is what they did for them, right?
Yeah.
And the same motherfuckers attacked them right back. Okay? So if you want to build a guerrilla type of war, you have to treat it right after you accomplish your mission. Your mission is never accomplished unless you actually get this job done. All right, you get these people, you train them, you armed them, and you left them. What the hell do you expect? They literally want to try to throw the power because they now have it.
Yeah.
I mean, why the fuck not?
You know, it's the Libertarian Party of America. It's the front runner of the Mises Caucus within the Libertarian Party. It's Dave Smith. You know what he says?
Mm-hmm.
And I find it to be absolutely true. If you want to know who America's next enemy is, just look at who they're funding now. And that'll probably be the monster that you're facing a few years down the road. But the brother, like, we are living in the age of technology. Now, this is different than the Industrial Revolution. The thing about the Industrial, and correct me here if you disagree, the Industrial Revolution, that was a first world country, so to speak, and it pushed third world, it pushed South America, most of Africa, most of Asia, parts of Europe. Most of Europe benefited. They would be part of the first world. To full dependence upon first world countries with the Industrial Revolution, with cars and manufacturing and industry. But now we're stepping into technology with AI and quantum computation. And that would be maybe the displacement of ourselves entirely, if we're not careful. And so, like, we have to rework our ideas on economy and what something is worth. Do you think so?
Yeah. I mean, because you said maybe, I just want to a little bit disagree right there and say there is just very little indication that the United States might be backing off and dominating or be the leader or the pioneer and AI plus quantum computation type of industry right now, type of technology, because for real right now it is the pioneer. There are promising ideas and work going on in Europe. As a matter of fact, the conference I've been to in California last winter, I have seen people from United Arab Emirates.
Of course.
I have seen people from Saudi Arabia.
Of course you have.
I've seen a lot of Arab people over there trying to expose research and technology. I also have seen a lot of Europeans. As a matter of fact, I've seen pretty much all Europeans. I've met people from all over, West to East Europe, all over. And so, but it's still, the United States is number one. Now, that might not be the case in, let's say, 10 years from now. And you know what would be the key player in determining that? It would be the regulation of the market.
Yeah?
It would be exactly that. Because right now, people...
How would you regulate it?
Well, that's the thing. You need some type of FDA type of organization for algorithms. Or the work you do. Because these algorithms, you can build in racism inside of them. Because, I can just give you one naive example.
It depends on the person who is creating it.
No. It does depend on the data that the algorithms are trained over. Not the person. Because the person might just be, very well-educated engineer or a physicist or a scientist. And they're just trying to do the job. Okay. So they are not analyzing the data. They don't see how this data was actually collected. When you talk about, for example, I'm just giving you one example.
If you turn the internet on, brother, it will be racist.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. Why? Why is it racist? Why? Because the data that's been fit to it, statistically, has been manipulated. It says, for example, I can give you a real example, but there is actually a Netflix documentary about it. Okay? In UK, they use this face recognition application with the police so they can easier identify potential sub. They call it sub.
They do that out in California now? Right. Like, because it's legal to just walk out of a store as long as you didn't take more than $950 or some number of that amount.
Yeah.
But what they don't tell you is, like, there's facial recognition.
Yeah.
And, like, once you hit a certain threshold, the next time you come in, you're a busted ass.
Yep.
And you're going to pay for your sins. But, like, that's kind of to that point.
Now, the thing is, they wanted to recognize, it links to it. They wanted to recognize potential, let's say, criminals or people who might be harmful for the society. This algorithm, this program, on the cop's camera, would pretty much recognize 100% of the black people as potential targets, and very few percent of the white people.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I'm not saying that, you know, there is... I'm not saying that the database that exists
Because in America, I'll tell you this...
Yeah, it is more...
It's not racist. There's
more black people in the jail than white people.
Not only that.
Okay.
But it is the way that we stack. Think about big cities. You've seen some of it.
Yeah.
We're in Mississippi. Mississippi is predominantly like a 60% black, 40% white, whatever else state.
Mm-hmm.
You went to Louisiana, you stayed in Baton Rouge, you've been to New Orleans. There are some places more not so savory than others. That's by design. What I'm saying is not racist, but like they stack those places. And the buildings and the businesses in those areas on purpose.
I can agree, because there is one thing that happened in Louisiana. We're going to a pottery night, and we passed through a very fancy neighborhood. We could see mansions, and I mean the mm-hmm. house has like a big yard right in front of it. It's beautiful. And right after it, I mean, the car did not take more than 4 minutes to get to a very, very poor neighborhood. Right after it, you can clearly see the difference. The housing, the cars, the streets, everything. So I would confirm what you're saying, but again, all of this taken in consideration does not negate the fact that all people right now are equal. Unless you know, let's assume that this person is black, this other person is white, unless you know them personally and you know their, you know, background history, you can't just say it that, oh, I suspect this black person to be a criminal and this white.
No, you can't say things.
This is
like
exactly
that.
What the program is doing. You get me? This is why it's wrong. This is why it's racist.
Why is it doing that?
So, again, because of the data. Because of the way you train the data. Because of...
Is it because of what I was describing?
I mean, it's just one component. But if you manipulate that, if you put threshold for that, it would take that into consideration, but also give people equal opportunity when it identifies them the first time. This actually begs the need for, as I said, an FDA type of organization for this type of industry. There are companies right now that originated making millions and millions of dollars in Europe just for regulating this industry. I shall mention Ireland because they are working hard on that, especially in the AI quantum computation, and also London as well in the UK. But not in the USA, not yet. So I want to relate to this even more. So I said, if you want something good to happen to you, go to Baton Rouge. So one of the good things that happened to me is I actually got an internship.
Hey, buddy. Let me tell you, I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
Proud of you, my friend.
Yeah, man.
See, so, I don't know. This is practically my brother over here, dude.
Yeah. And so this is a big company. It's actually a big project collaboration between Microsoft and Global Quantum Intelligence. What they want to do right now is they want to do a benchmarking for the entire market in the United States. What's benchmarking? Benchmarking is basically trying to regulate this based on scientific rules. For now, I mean, after a while it will be passed as laws, hopefully, and people... Potentially, politicians would grab their attention right there and start, you know, regulate this industry.
I'm going to let you finish your thought, but dude, like, with the advent of, like, VPNs, and I don't think, like, focusing on a specific part on the globe is enough. I think it needs to be all around, like, I could turn a VPN on my phone right now, and I could be in Australia. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean. But it can't happen without, again, the green light of those who actually set the main policies, the order of this world. So I can actually mention a similar thing. Before World War II, just between World War I and II, there was this famous Japanese doctor who wanted to study biological weapons because it's been used... This is after. And what's been used on them was nuclear power. It was not biological. Biological power is...
Yeah, it would be like...
chemicals and gases and all...
Ebola or...
Yeah, right? So he wanted to study this and actually make all the nations aware about it. It did take 8 years just to form an international collaboration. This dude has to go over... around 70-ish countries. He visited a lot of countries in Europe, a lot of countries in Africa. I mean, he visited the United States, visited Washington, Ohio, a couple more states, and did lectures and wanted to have data from the people. Without the United States permission right there,
at
the time, right, we would have known about how dangerous biological weapons are until, you know, later on.
Yeah, but they slept on it, didn't they?
That's right. They did.
How about that?
But, I mean, it's still a point. Make the people aware of it. This is how you make a revolution.
Can I interrupt you for a second? Tell you something a little funny?
Yeah.
I've been drinking poop water with cyanide. These energy drinks, Monster,
yeah,
Red Bull, C4, Celsius.
Yeah.
Dude, like, I walked into Munson's today, dude. I was expecting nothing. I was going in there to have just a beer, hang out with the boys.
Yeah.
Walked in there with a Munster, and he was like, oh, you're drinking poop water. And I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about, dude? And they pulled up the video and, like, pulled up a list of the ingredients and where the ingredients came from. And I was like, I guess I'm going back to coffee. Good Lord. Like, like, on top of, like, what we're saying just about, like, we're talking about, like, internet and your own protection and your own rights on the internet, but how much bullshit is getting cleared with, like, what's in the very thing that you're eating or drinking? And you think they're doing a good job regulating that? I don't.
I know. I can actually give more examples. It doesn't just... I mean, this is just talking about the food, talking about the tech industry. We can talk about supplements. People who go to the gym and take, you know...
vitamin You're a gym D guy.
And all this stuff and omega-3. It has a badge written right there with a very little font. It says... it's not FDA regulated type of supplement.
That's kind
of
wild to be out with the public.
Then why the fuck are you selling it to me?
That's a question. That's a great question.
A lot of labs did analysis on this. There is a big meta-analysis. A meta-analysis is, you know, when you stack a lot and a lot of data and a lot of research in one publication. So it's more like a library, okay? So they did this type of research over different supplements. You know what they found?
What did they find for
it? They found it contaminated not only by bacteria and shit, but also some of them are contaminated by steroids. And like, to the degree that if you take this on a daily basis, it will definitely affect you. So let me tell you how, I mean, if you look at the history of this industry, this industry jumped from a few million dollars industry in 2000 to hundreds of million dollars industry in 2010. You know why?
Damn.
Why it got so liquid? Because of the lack of the regulations.
Got too big for their britches and they just kind of let it go. It was too big of a horse to rein down.
Same thing applies for the big pharma.
Yo, don't even get me fucking started, bro.
This is actually the biggest lobby in the USA. Big Pharma is
Biggest lobby in the USA that don't do jack shit.
Yeah.
Thanks, dude. Yeah.
But we're trying to make this fair, because apparently these people don't care about us. They just care about, again, people who can define the rights. You gotta have power, have money.
Take people like you and me, okay? I love people. I like creating events for people. I like creating comedy and music and bringing people together to celebrate the arts. And then you're on the other end of it, dude. That's why I'm like, dude, we'd be brothers without this. But I have so much respect for what you do, because you're on the other side of the fence to where you're going to affect the future. Dude, the work that you're doing and what you're studying is humanity in and of itself. Do you understand? Do you ever think about that? Because, like, quantum computation and the way that our computers work and how they think and what they do on top of AI, like, you know how important it is to have somebody like you in that field that I know loves humanity and is, like, not cynical or maniacal about it? It's like, thank God for him, man. I'm glad he's there, because I don't know these other guys, you know?
Yeah, so, thank you for that. Yeah. I mean, there is no other way of fighting this unless you make it better from the inside. Trying to independently think about the better future for everyone, you really have to make a change from within the system, because fighting the system itself from outside puts everyone in danger. Just because the system has all this power to portray everything. Well, and I'm not trying to portray the system as the evil, devious thing out there. No, this is not the case. Because this system has been working as well for the benefit of the people.
That's why we're here.
Yeah, and we can't fucking deny that.
But there are people like who work as gatekeepers.
Yep.
And are kind of like standing in the way, being like, I don't know, maybe we should take a step back. Maybe we should think about this a little bit. But yeah, dude, it's, man, to, like, what we're talking about, like, take the conversation back to Louisiana, Baton Rouge and all that, to the Amtrak, to going through a brief history of the Middle East up to now, is, like, we are leaving the Industrial Revolution. We're stepping into the Technological Revolution. It's going to have AI. It's going to have quantum computation. And, like it or not, like, there's going to be computers, like, working a whole lot harder than humanity. And they're going to be figuring things out. And, like, we need to have these boards to figure out, like, dude, like, where do we stand? You know? Like, not only, like, behind the code and everything they do, if you release it on the internet, oh my God, if they only saw Reddit, that's just the absolute worst of the human population. But, my goodness, it's like, how do you... With AI, you know, the thing that freaks with me the most is AI has the most potential to be so much better than humanity, because you can strip away the things that make humanity bad, and that's emotion. But if you expose AI to the internet, you're going to see human emotion, and so you're going to see anger, jealousy, strife, sadness, depression, happiness, and, like, being wronged and all this and that. And, like, in a perfect AI, in a perfect system, I would love it to study human history and know it, but, like, to be androgynous about it, to not feel any kind of way, to just kind of be like, it is kind of what it is, and not to take a side. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like, just take, like, war. Is, like, we were to go to the AI with the Palestinian side of things, or with the Israeli side of things, and, like, maybe, like, AI and this quantum computation could, like, okay, this is what we're gonna do, and this is how it works, and this is the best deal, and maybe that's it. But at that point, dude, it's almost acting as if it's a god. And that's not something that we want either. You know what I mean? Like, we almost created, like, a human god, dude. What the fuck is going on around here, Farouk?
I still believe in the human nature. Like, and even though with us so many
How do you feel about AI songs? Have you heard them?
Yeah, I did.
They're not bad, are they?
They're not bad. No. I think it's going to enrich the entire thing.
Enrich? Are you for real?
Yeah. Why not?
Okay.
You think they're going to make musicians sit at home? I think this is very extreme to think about it. They are not... I mean, AI music will not replace musicians.
You don't think so?
I don't think so.
Because they create a hologram of fucking Tupac in Las Vegas, and, like, people paid a lot of money to go to that, and it was just a hologram.
I have been to a hologram party before for Om Kulthum, very famous. She died like 50 years ago. Very famous.
Okay, so it's kind of same thing.
Yeah, very famous singer. It was like
five. But you still appreciate. You do. You appreciate modern art.
Yeah, I do. I do. But the thing is, I think every other human being out there wanna somehow. Somewhere in them just want to listen to people just like them.
Do you think there should be a disclaimer? Like, I think it's
like they say this is AI made, or this is no. You know, I think maybe humanity would develop the sense of it.
You think so?
I mean, we're evolving.
We do, dude. Like, with these guys, dude, they're talking to girls online. They're not even real.
Yeah.
But they think they are.
Yeah, and they get to it.
But maybe they trick themselves, you know. I don't know the psyche of that. But do you see what I'm saying?
I do use AI on daily basis. I use ChatGPT 4.0.
I trained my Meta AI to talk to me like it was drunk.
Yeah.
And it inserts hiccups and burps and giggling and laughter. Okay. And it's fun. And that's just on like Facebook or whatever. Yeah. But like, yeah, I use AI too. It's great.
But on what I was going to say, based on my experience on a technical level, where you actually use it for equations and stuff that you may actually have already known or read about before, and maybe you just want to run a test. It's not the best student that you want to have in the class. It's good. But definitely, you can see the repetition. You can see the repetition out there, and it's undeniable to actually, when it comes to a technical level of talking with AI, at the current state of it, it's undeniable that an experienced or an expert on the field can actually differentiate between what the AI is saying, whether it's actually, you know, 100% right or is just, you know, some dog shit, or sure, maybe a combination of both. So I think my idea right now could just be expanded to everything else. It's just, unless there is another revolution coming up in this AI that would be like indistinguishable from, you know, a human-made art.
I think that AI and that technology is going to be so exponential, so much faster,
yes,
than the industry or even technology,
yes, yeah,
is to a point to where, like,
I think
you'll never have to stop learning.
I think the big, from a bigger point of view, when it comes to the collective interest of humanity, I think the main point of view would be utilizing this AI machinery to make the best use out of our resources, to maybe, you know, solve the climate problem, maybe, you know, solve the traffic problem, maybe try to work on, maybe help us be interplanetary. Maybe help us leave this Earth, because we've been here for a while and we're growing. So there might just be another place. I mean, we are humans. Yeah, we do have a short lifespan when it compares, you know, to the universe. Actually, incompatible.
What do you think that does to religion?
But like, I think that would push us to the boundaries. I think this would open other boundaries for human exploration. I'm very excited about this, as well as I'm scared of the bad consequences of it. All right? I'm trying to be cheerful and just give you that bright side of it, but there is a shitty side as well, right? This is why I was pushing towards regulating this when it's just a baby right now.
Yeah.
So let's see. Let's see.
Start thinking through. you, thank you, thank you.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.